Hello, I'm Dorothy. In the mid-1990s, a group of older women shared their experiences of feminism at 10:40 dinner and discussion evenings. Their stories were recorded on tape. The podcast that you're about to hear is made from one of these recordings. The following questions shaped their stories. What attracted you to feminism? How has feminism impacted on your life? What have been your positive experiences of feminism? Have there been any disappointments? And what are your issues now? This is Doreen's story.
I guess I have to say where I come from. I'm a New Zealander from the South Island. We're very parochial there. Very. And, of course, being lesbian is a no-no, much like the politics of Tasmania. And it still is in the South Island, considerably ill-taste to be gay or lesbian. And so the shores of Australia called to me some time ago. But I feel that you need to know that, because when I was 16, I entered a Dominican convent and stayed there for 25 years. Now, what did I do politically about that? Well, I think I did what the men told me to do, and that was to obey the rules of the church and be of service to other people. And I guess I've done that most of my life. Now, whether that's been in social justice because of education or in nursing as I'm now employed, I've still put my service to people, but preferably to the gay and lesbian community, as my agenda. And so when Vatican II happened, there was a whole group of nuns who kind of, in every different order, got together somehow and said, this is what changes we would like in our community, which had to be fought for very much the same way as people in the world are fighting for abortion or gay liberation rights. And it was very difficult because you got yourself a label. And people didn't know whether you were in fact having what's called a particular relationship with other sisters. This was frowned upon. Of course, lesbians are the most awful people in the whole world. But in many convents, there are women who choose to be celibate, who actually one day say, I know I'm lesbian, but that's what I offer to the God. And there, of course, are others who are not and who frown and think it's terrible. There are people who do have relationships and leave. I'm sure you've all read Lesbian Nuns Speak Out. That came out about 1975, I think. The people in that gave their stories, and you could hear that some were single and celibate for God, some wanted to leave and did form ongoing relationships with other nuns or with other people within the community. And in a sense, they too still live out their religious calling in the way that they work or what they bring to their work, because you can't get rid of 25 years of life and make it null and void just because it's different. And most of us, of course, have had a university education, and that's helped a great deal when people have left. In my own life, I chose not to go into education, and I left under a great cloud. And the cloud was that I had changed the constitution of the Dominican sisters in a way that allowed people to be totally responsible for themselves. In other words, if you wanted to pray at 5 o'clock in the morning, you could get up and do that. If you chose to sleep in because you needed to sleep in and you did your praying some other time, it didn't mean that you were a bad nun. This is a very difficult thing for many people to get hold of. At the same time, nuns were paid a stipend, which was, in some orders, was as much as $50 for the month. And with that, you got all your personal belongings, toothpaste. You weren't allowed to use internals. You used to use the surfboard. And, you know, in the old days, you literally had to take the empty packet or the empty tube of paste to get a new one. And this helped your humility, of course. I don't know that it did help people's humility. I think you reached a point where, oh, well, bugger it, it's this time of the month. I've got to go through this, and so you do it, and you can do it without even thinking about what you're doing or how you're doing it. Anyway, the convent rules were changed. The people in mine, who were superior to me, ended up having to make a decision as to whether it was good for one person to leave or was it better for the congregation to be split. And the decision was that one person would leave, and that was me. And I might tell you that was the hardest time of my life, because all of me wanted to stay there, but I had been pushed out. So I couldn't find solace in church or church activities here. And I was such a sort of high-up person that I couldn't stay in New Zealand either. So I did migrate across the Tasman, and I was actually taken in by a woman I had helped to obtain an annulment in the days when Catholics didn't divorce. And she was living with a chap. They weren't married. And I stayed with them. And they got me a job as a house sitter to Sydney's rich and famous. And so I spent my first 6 months to a year with the rich and famous, thinking, oh, is this how they live? And because I wasn't already a nurse, I thought, well, I have to see if I like this idea. I applied for a job in what I thought was going to be a good experience at St. Vincent, and they offered to employ me as an assistant to a nurse aide. And I spent most of my time in the pantry. But I was about to take whoever in St. Vincent's private pan to use. So, you know, I know that these people all function the same way as I do. And that was my consolation, you know. But then I moved to another house, and this time I would take the rolls or the merch to work, and I would turn up to St. Vincent's, the little assistant. And I would park these wonderful cars. I would park them in the doctor's car park because, you know, only a doctor would have a car like that. And then I thought, oh, this is terrible. But I had a good, you know, it was good and bad there. I learned that the church didn't forget who I was ultimately. And in the end, it was no good staying. But I did know that this is a field of work, because I didn't want to teach anymore, that I could move into. So then it was a case of finding a hospital that would train me, which they did. I did find one, and that was a new experience. I learned the facts of life in my training days, and people were very kind. As well as having a field day, they were very kind. And it was at my training hospital that I realised I was lesbian, and that I didn't have to hide in the closet anymore. There were hundreds of them around. But even some of those hundreds were still in a closet. But slowly, slowly they were coming out. And it was at that time that I was introduced to OWL, which is Older Wives and Lesbian Support. And I went there and found them very warm and welcoming as far as the coming out situation was concerned. And then I moved on. There wasn't anything political there. Well, not to my knowledge, anyway. And I moved on and I moved on in my job, and I spent a year in Saudi Arabia trying to catch up to the rest of you materially. And that was an interesting year. But again, like you, Meg, it was a new page. It was again a chance to say, gosh, I've been out in this world 4 years. Here I am. I'm four. And now, you know, the end, October of this year, it will be 10 years all up. And so I feel 10 years old. In some areas of my life, and I don't mean to labour that, but there is huge gaps in my knowledge of feminist activity. I know about social justice things through church, but again, that was nun and Catholic church orientated. I have never been in a Mardi Gras parade. One day I will make it. But it's really good to see that there's so much here for people if you want to have, or if you have the courage to come, perhaps is another way of putting it. And in my present work, I work at St. Luke's, and I have a wonderful job where I see every individual person who is having surgery. So I get the chance to talk to people who have decided on hysterectomies or sterilisations, both men and women. And sometimes, just sometimes, well, a lot of times now we're reversing that. So people do need, I think, to be educated to the point of why are you really doing this? Because to reverse it, you've got 3 months to get yourself pregnant, and if you don't get pregnant, then you've wasted something of your life in many ways because it affects your relationships. And it's really nice to be able to just sit and be with people on a very intimate level. So I'm bringing my religious life stuff here, my education, my nursing knowledge, and we're moving forward at St. Luke's and St. George Private in offering this as a service to people pre- and post-operatively. So I guess I'm going to stop there. All right. Thank you.